Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Tech Guy podcast is provided by DSL Extreme. Call 866-2-GET-NET or DSL Extreme.
Hi, this is Leo, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Radio Networks on Saturday, September 29th, 2007. This is show 391. Enjoy.
The time is now 2 a.m. in Bukava, Belgian Congo.
A good day to you. It's 2 a.m. in Bukava. I don't know what time it is where you are, but I can tell you one thing. It's time to talk about tech. Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. And we're going to talk about tech for the next few hours right here on this station. I invite you to join me and talk about it. There is some big news this week, and I know you're going to want to weigh in on it. So let me give you the phone number right away. I might jot this down. 8888-ASK-LEO. Oh, you can memorize that. 8888-ASK-LEO. Or you can, if you like numbers, 888-827-5536. 888-827-5536. Tech means not just computers. I really want to emphasize that. It is a show about technology, digital technology specifically. So that means computers and the internet, yes, but cell phones and camcorders and MP3 players and PDAs and home theater and all that stuff. And today, I think a lot of the talk is going to be about cell phones, because I'm hopping mad. And I think you ought to be, too, whether you own an iPhone or not, and whether you care about Apple or not. If you're a consumer, you ought to be hopping mad, because Apple has done something that is reprehensible. That if not illegal, and I'm not convinced it's not illegal, but if not illegal, is absolutely immoral and just plain wrong. Something I want to make clear here, by the way, is that when I come on and talk, I am not trying to give advice to Apple about how to run their business or any other company. I am not here for the computer industry, the tech industry. I couldn't care less about whether they make money. I only care that they make money to the extent that I care that they keep making products for us, because I'm a consumer. I'm a user, and I represent users, and that's what I'm here for. The voice of the consumer, our voice. Because the computer industry gets plenty of press, they get plenty of attention, they have plenty of advocates. And frankly, in what I'm about to say, I think I'm surprised that a lot of people who should really be advocating for the consumers are in fact defending the company. And all I could think is it must be Stockholm Syndrome. You know what that is. When it happened, it was coined after the hostages in Stockholm turned and turned to the side of their kidnappers. Patty Hearst is the most famous case of a Stockholm Syndrome. It's a psychological response sometimes seen in an abducted hostage, in which the hostage shows signs of loyalty to the hostage taker. Those of us who are held hostage by the cell phone industry and the tech industry and the computer industry sometimes suffer from this. And there are those out there, particularly the Apple fans, you know who you are. Apple, right or wrong, they bleed rainbow colors. And a lot of us who use cell phones, just because it's not because we love the cell phone companies, nobody loves the cell phone companies, but just because that's the way it is. And well, isn't that just the way it is? And, you know, that's just the way it is. Well, it isn't the way it ought to be. And let me talk about this. What happened? Apple, as you know, sells a very expensive phone. It was more expensive. It was $600, now down to $400, called the iPhone. And like any other cell phone, Apple requires you to sign up for a 2-year contract with AT&T. That's very common. Now, I shouldn't say any other cell phone, because there are companies. Nokia is an example. that sell unlocked phones. In fact, Nokia is taking advantage of this, by the way, with big full-page ads in all the major newspapers saying, they're the N95, it's open, it's unlocked, you might want to think about it. So, but many cell phone companies do this. They get in cahoots with a mobile phone carrier, and they make a deal. Now, usually, I should point out, the deal includes a somewhat of a subsidy on the phone. You get the phone cheap because you're agreeing for, you know, to bondage, to serfdom, to for 2 years to use that phone company. But this is not one of those cases. Apple is not selling a subsidized phone here. This is a $600 or now $400 phone. Apple makes, by all estimates, several hundred dollars on each phone sold. Nevertheless, agreed with AT&T to require 2 years with AT&T. A lot of people bought the phone and agreed to that. Now, that's important. Those of us who bought the phone agreed to that. We said, yeah, well, you know, we're buying the phone. We know we have to use AT&T. We'll bite the bullet. We'll do that. But then along comes some, I think, white hats, some heroic guys who say, wait a minute, you know, this is a computer. And like any computer, we think we can unlock it. We can allow you to put other applications. See, Apple won't let you put anything on there. That's another thing. Most phones at least allow you to install some applications. Apple says, no, no to-do list, too bad. You don't need one. You care more about stocks, don't you? In fact, that's why we put that on the front page, not the to-do list. There is no to-do list. No cut and paste. No, you don't need that. You want applications? Use the browser. All right, we agreed to that, too. We knew when we were coming in. That's Apple said no third-party applications. But some bright guys came along, and look, they figured it out. Look, we could put some third-party applications. Oh, this is great. And by the way, some of them very useful. One of them, Navizon, has been downloaded 80,000 times. That's like 10% of the total iPhone audience. 80,000 people are using this to find their way. It's like a kind of GPS based on the cell sites and very clever, free application. Nobody's making money on this, by the way. They're giving this away. Okay, cool. Apple even says, Apple's a Greg Joswiak. Jaws, they call him. Says, we don't mind if people put applications. That's okay. Then the bright boys come along and say, you know, the truth is you can unlock this phone. You could use it. Like many, many phones which come locked can be unlocked. Somewhat, in fact, this is such a common practice that the Copyright Board in the United States ruled that it is not illegal to do so. It does not violate the Copyright Act. It is not circumvention. It's an exemption to the circumvention rule. It's okay to do this. It's your phone, right? These bright boys figured out how to unlock it. That means people all over the world can now use it with other carriers. Or if you don't like AT&T, you can use it with T-Mobile in the States. You can use it in Canada. Ooh, cool. This week, then, Apple says, wait a minute. We got to warn you. We know you've been doing this. We got to warn you. This could be damaging to your phone. You violate the warranty when you do this. And we don't guarantee that any update isn't going to damage your phone. Thursday, they push out an update, 1.1.1 to the phone. And lo and behold, yes, it does delete all those third-party applications. And apparently, according to the third-party application folks, makes it pretty darn hard to get them back on. Okay, I can dig that. But it does something worse. And here's where I have a problem. For people who unlocked their phone and did the update, despite the warnings, it bricks the phone. It breaks it. It fries it. It destroys it. It makes it unusable. You have a $400 piece of junk. Now, I know a lot of people are making apologies for Apple and AT&T, saying, well, look, they got to defend their business model. You know, this is where they warned you. Why did you do the update? I, by the way, did not do the update. I still have an unlocked working phone with all the third-party apps. But I have friends who did. I'm not sure why they did, knowing what was going to happen, but they did. Somebody had to try it, right? That's neither here nor there. Let me make an analogy to see if this makes... See, this is why this bugs me. I'm going to make an analogy and then see if this makes sense to you. Let's say you're selling a cow, okay? Make it easy. You're selling a cow. I want a cow. You say, but I got to warn you, this cow is only for making milk. You cannot make cheese with this cow. You cannot eat the cow. This is a milk cow. Well, all right, that's what I plan to do. I plan to make milk. I'll buy the cow. Well, I warn you, this is a milk cow, okay? In fact, I insist that if you buy this cow, that you sell us the milk, okay? Okay, fine. It's a milk cow. I buy the cow. Got the cow. I have it for a while. You know what? I want to make cheese. Sorry, but I feel like making cheese. It's my cow, and I feel like making cheese. I make cheese. You come next door, and you kill my cow. No, you said, I warned you. You might even warn me. You keep making cheese with that cow, I'm going to kill that cow. But it's my cow. I feel like making cheese. You kill my cow. It's dead. That's a dead cow. But wait a minute. Wasn't that my cow? I'm not renting the cow. Well, you agreed to it. That's what Apple's done. Now, I don't know if it's illegal. I'm not a lawyer. I would think it's somewhat illegal. I would think it's kind of like a cable company, if it catches you stealing cable, frying your TV set. So it's punitive. We're going to punish you for this. They can't do that. We live in a rule of law. You don't get to kill somebody's phone because you don't like what they're doing with it. So that's what Apple has done. Now, maybe Apple can get away with it. I'm surprised people are defending it. But don't you think, even if it's legal, it's wrong, it's immoral? Don't you think Apple, it's possible that for technical reasons there was no other way to do this. The evidence is to the contrary. The evidence is to the contrary. I don't think there is any requirement. They didn't have to fry these phones. And warning me that they're going to kill my cow doesn't make it okay to kill the cow. You've destroyed my personal property. You've reached out and destroyed it. Isn't that wrong? Shouldn't Apple be held to account for this? And the reason I bring this up is more than just Apple and the iPhone. What it really underscores is the deal with the devil that companies do when they make closed systems. When you put copy protection on something, when you make a closed system, users want to take what they own and do what they want with it. They want to open it up. By necessity, if you copy protect something, you're going to criminalize your user, and ultimately, you're going to have to punish them. Is that good for anybody? Let's talk about it. What do you think? 888-ASK-LEO. That's my number. 888-827-5536. I am the Tech Guy. Chat room, if you want to fight it out, is irc.dslextreme.com. Show notes are online, too, on a website. Now you can find a link to the chat room there. It's techguylabs.com. Techguylabs.com. Sasha is taking the show notes and keeping us up to date. And thank you, Sasha. We've got Sasha in the chat room along with Dan, Mike, Dustin, Illuminati, Mick, all keeping an eye on things. Now, let's get to the phones and talk high tech. 8888 Ask Leo is a number starting with Bob in Lafayette, California. Hey, Bob, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. I've got a strange situation. I have a computer where it has about 105 gigabyte hard drive. It was getting full. I bought an external hard drive I was going to back up and then sort it out and figure out, reduce some of the files on the one in the computer. So when I backed up all of C, I just said move everything C and D over to this external hard drive, which was 200 gigabytes. And when I look at after it did that, it only shows 45 gigabytes on the new external hard drive, and I can't figure out what on earth is going on.
You didn't get anything. Everything. How did you move the files?
I just used a little program called Karen's Replicator.
Oh, okay, good. Karen knows what she's doing.
I selected C. I just said copy all of C and all of D, which is just a sector of C. I mean, there's only one hard drive in the computer.
And so I'm going to look real quickly at what now. Karen writes these great power tools, and she really knows what she's doing.
Right.
And I just want to see what you want when you do something like that is not a file level copier. You want a sector copier because you want to get everything, including system files, hidden files, and so forth. She backs up entire drive. Okay. So it looks like she's copying everything. She's using Visual Basic for her stuff, which may mean that she can't see some system files and can't back them up.
But would they be that meant that large?
I mean, well, I mean, certainly one file that'd be very big is your swap file, but not you're talking 45 or 50 gigs. So I'm not sure what the other 50 gigs are, but I do have to warn you, this kind of copying may get, not make a bootable disk. In fact, it won't make a bootable disk when you copy it back.
Yeah, no, I just use it to so that if I erase...
It's just a backup.
Yeah, I can just go and find...
I think it's a good backup. You did drive by drive, right? You didn't say folder by folder. You said copy the whole drive.
Oh, yeah. I said all of C and all of D, which was their partition when they sent the computer or the backup files on there.
Yeah, there's all sorts of reasons why you might have had less space available and then, but not have that much data on there. I wouldn't worry about it.
Is there a better way to do a backup?
Well, no, I mean, it depends what your purpose is. If you want to backup the, make a copy of the drive, in other words, make a duplicate that's bootable and everything, exact copy, it's better to use, you didn't want to do that. And then in that case, it's better to use something like Drive Snapshot or Norton Ghost. But in this case, you just want to make a data backup. And I think the replicator is great. It's free. It works great. I think there's nothing wrong with it.
Okay.
And I think you probably got everything that was there. You know, it's always possible. I can give you a lot of reasons why there may be extra. That's a lot, 40 or 50 gigs. But
I mean, I went in and tried to just select files at random all over just to see if I could find them. I found all the ones that I was looking
for. It could be slack space. It could be a big swap file. It could be an unemptied recycle bin. It could be, I mean, there's a lot of things it could be.
I did that, but so you're saying a swap file...
It wouldn't get that large. It might get to be a few gigs, though.
But, I mean, even if that's the case, I'm curious if I say copy everything on C, why wouldn't it have copied the swap
file? It wouldn't copy those low-level system files. And that's what I mean. You're not going to get a bootable disk out of it.
Okay.
It just doesn't copy everything. It can't see and it can't access everything. It may be... It probably doesn't copy the registry, which is also fairly large. Have you already erased the source disk?
Oh, no. Not yet.
Smart. There are tools you can compare the two.
Oh.
In fact, Karen probably has a tool that you can compare file by file to see. Karen's power tools are so great. She just really does some great stuff. What you want to do is compare the two disks. And it'll tell you if you're missing anything really critical. I think that's probably okay. I see this a lot, where you just kind of these bloated drives that can't explain what's filling them up. Howard, West Los Angeles, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, Howard. Got a problem. I can't listen to you on my cell phone anymore.
You were able to before?
Yeah, I had a Trio, and then for some reason I wasn't able to...
You're talking about the stream, huh?
Pardon me?
Are you talking about the stream?
Yes. Yeah, I would do is there was an address. I'd plug it into media player.
Yeah. That's one for KFI or whatever station you're listening to. I'm afraid I don't know what they've done. I'm actually heard from a couple of people who are having trouble hearing the stream. It's possible that they've changed first of all, I think they change the URL regularly. So if you're using an old URL, you should go back and get a new one. They want you to watch it on the web page. It does require, I believe it's a Windows Media Stream, a Windows audio stream. So it does require the proper audio software. But I'm afraid I don't know what each station, since we have so many stations, I don't know what each one does, and I don't know exactly how to support it for you, so I can't. Leo Laporte, I am the tech guy. Tech Guy is brought to you by DSL Extreme. Call 866 the number 2 GetNet or visit them online at dslextreme.com. Leo Laporte, The Tech Guy, 8888 Ask Leo, 888-827-5536. We talk about the iPhone. There's other stories, too, we talk about, and I will talk about a little later on. Halo 3, loving it, playing it. An answer to our, or more additional details for our last caller who was having trouble streaming the radio show on his Palm Trio. I would check with the chat room. These guys have figured out every possible fix and solution. They're really good on supporting the streams because many of them listen to the streams. I just don't know how the different stations do it, and they seem to change a lot. So irc.dslextreme.com is the chat room, and they seem to be pretty good on supporting you with that kind of thing. They tell me that KFI, I think, one of the stations, changes its stream URL regularly, so that probably is why that URL doesn't work. I'm not sure why they do that, though. Bob in Lafayette. Oh, no, I already talked to Bob in Lafayette. Let's talk to David in San Diego. Hey, David, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Yeah. I am transferring my analog video tapes onto my Windows XP computer.
Great.
And most of those tapes have multiple events, such as Victoria's birthday, going to the zoo, and so on.
Right.
What I want to do is download the entire hour-long tape onto my computer, and then once it's in digital format, is to select those separate events and save them to an individual video file.
Right.
I've got Windows Movie Maker and Studio 10, but I can't seem to make either of those programs save just that, you know, 20 seconds.
Right. And this is one of the advantages you'll see when you go to digital video cameras is, in most cases, when you import from digital video cameras, it slices it up into individual segments. Every time you stop the camera is another bit.
Right.
Analog didn't do that because analog cameras didn't put any information on there, on the video. So the way you would do this in Movie Maker or Studio or any program is pretty much the same. You have to make a video. You have to do video editing. So you take your long clip and you trim it down to what you want and you make that your movie, right? And then you export your movie just as you would if you were going to, you know, do a fine edited movie with titles and everything. But in this case, it's just a clip. And then you go back, you restore the clip and you trim it again and you trim it again and you trim it again. I mean, it's a painstaking process, but that's the way you have to do it. Have you tried that? Does that make sense?
I've made one movie using my digital camera, so
it's just like making a movie, except that instead of putting the titles and transitions and more clips in, you just put one clip.
Okay, so each of those clips are essentially going to be a separate movie.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for the call. It's a long, tedious project, and one I have on my agenda, too. You can't leave them on the tapes. Because the tapes are going to wear out. You get about 10 years out of magnetic tape, and then it's just, you know, you're running the risk it's going to die. Those are precious memories. You know, you can get it. There are services that'll do this for a fee. But if you have a video capture card and you have a computer, it's something you can do yourself, and it's a great project. The fun of it is you're going through these old tapes. It is good to remember, though, as we go forward. David Pogue wrote a great column on this. He's the tech writer for the New York Times, in which he said, you know, the real question is, who are we making these tapes for and who's gonna watch them? We shoot hours and hours and hours of video. We take hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pictures because it's easy. And then we just kind of put them away. So it is probably good to remember that at some point somebody is either going to throw them out or have to take the time to do exactly what you're doing right now, David. And that's, you know, that's a lot of work. It's a lot of trouble. Worth it, though. And I think the real key is to edit these down, to be kind of ruthless, to throw stuff out and you know, hone it down to the shorter video that everybody's going to want to see, or at least the kids. And then when you die and they throw them out, you won't know. You don't care. I know that's what's basically I'm leaving this legacy, this rich media legacy for my kids who couldn't care less. They'll look at it once. Maybe they'll show their kids and then that's gone. There's Grandpa Leo. Oh, he was a character. or let's hope nothing worse. Jeremy, Long Beach, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Did I press the right button? I did not. Now I'm pressing the right button. Hi, Jeremy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Great. I have a comment and a question. First, my comment. I've been into the PSP scene for a while, and people have been, you know, hacking firmware so you could put Homebrew and all kinds of third-party apps on there. And then Sony keeps releasing updates that have the potential to brick PSPs just like with the iPhone and Apple. But people have figured out how to unbrick PSPs and how to, you know, revert them back to being able to work even after they become, like, non-usable.
Well, that's the key. We have to really define our terms. When I say brick, I mean irrecoverably damaged.
Really?
And as far as we can tell, that's what's happened. Now, it's early, and it may be that people will figure out how to recover it, or that Apple has, and I suspect this may be the case, a secret way. In fact, I'm hearing anecdotal evidence. I haven't heard anybody I know that you could go in, and if you plead your case properly, that they can restore that phone. But this is the question. I agree with you. If it's recoverable, if you can get it back so that you can put your AT&T SIM in and suddenly it's working again, that's one thing. And that, yeah. I think that Apple's well within, as Sony is, well within their rights. I mean, they have the right to put firmware in that breaks all your hacks.
Yeah.
But they don't have the right to make it unusable, you know, to break it permanently, because it's your property. So you're right. So, but now, how hard has it been for the PSP hack people to get the thing back working again?
It's taken a while. As a matter of fact, they've been doing kind of a workaround for a long time, and then just recently they made this battery that uses a storage bank inside of the battery, because all the batteries on PSPs have some sort of a memory inside,
right.
And it writes one of the metal parts of the battery, and then that's how Sony, if you send your PSP in after you mod it or hack it or do whatever to it, that's how they fix it. And so we actually have the fix that Sony uses now.
Interesting. So,
it's cool.
See, now, I'm not sure I understand why Sony would worry so much. I mean, frankly, part of the reason the PSP still succeeds is because of these hacks.
Yeah.
It's very hackable. Now, I guess they have to protect games from being pirated, and that's probably the main thrust of their...
Yeah. Running backups and whatnot.
They probably don't care if you put early on you were able to put browsers or different skins on it. They probably don't care about that.
Yeah, not so much. And then I have a question for you.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
So I have a Mac and a PC, and I found some patches that allow you to patch your disk image of Mac OS X Tiger and write to a PC in dual boot form so you can have Windows and Apple on a PC. It's not supported by anybody, and there may be some, you know, questions.
It's a major hack. That's a major hack. Which one are you looking at?
It's Mac OS X Tiger 10.4.9.
And this isn't Cherry or Pear PC. This is something else.
No, this is 100%. I've formatted one partition of my drive.
Wow. I haven't heard about this one.
Oh, yeah. And so I can boot into Windows on my Intel. I'm running a Intel Pentium 4 3.0.
Just a generic PC, not a Mac.
A generic PC. I built the PC myself.
And it's running now, and it's running OS X Tiger reliably?
100%. Yeah.
Wow. Can you tell us where we can get this hack? You're anonymous. No one knows your name. No one knows where you're from.
You can go online and you can look through torrents, and I'll spell a keyword.
Give me a keyword. That's what we want. I'd like to try this.
The letter U, P H U C K.
Okay. I'm glad you spelled that. All right.
that's the creator of it. And then there's another one, Josh, J A S. Both of those you can look up, and then Tiger, and then the keyword is x86 afterward.
Wow, very interesting.
4.9 x86, you can find it. But
I founded the site and a lot more. This is interesting.
Oh yeah, and
this is something Apple really does not want. Apple wants you to sell you an Apple computer, and they've really put in copy protection schemes to prevent you from running OS X. It's something a lot of people have wanted to do on a blue, on a beige box, and it sounds like they're doing it.
Oh yeah, but my The only problem that I've run into is it recognizes all my USB ports, it recognizes my chipset and everything on there. My wireless card it can't see, and for some reason my graphics card it can't see. Yet I'm running a Radeon 9550, like an ATI card, and that's supposedly a native supported card through Apple. So I'm really confused. It can see USB.
Yeah, but the cards Apple puts in its, it may say it's a 9550 or an X1900 or whatever, but they're not exactly the same as a PC card. The firmware is different. And so that's probably something that, I mean, look, anytime you're doing what you're doing, these are the kinds of issues you're going to have. I don't know what the solution is to that. Obviously, you're going to have to spend some time on their forums. This guy has a page.
Yeah.
There are forums. I'm actually blown away. I thought this was too difficult to do and nobody had been able to do it successfully. I'm very surprised they're able to do this.
Here's the key when you do it is you have to install Apple last. You have to go from a clean hard drive. You have to do FAT32 on one part, NTSF on the other part, and then you have to install Windows first. And then when you install Apple, it installs a Darwin bootloader, which you can choose which drive you want to boot off of.
Now, if Apple pushes an update down to you, I'd be very careful. It could brick your computer.
I've thought about this.
Apple's been known to do that, you know. So I'd worry a little bit. Clearly, Apple is not going to go off after end users on something like this. They go after the people who are doing it, distributing it.
Yeah.
So it's I would say relatively safe to do it yourself. Probably not completely safe for me to promote it, and certainly risky for the guys who are putting up websites and telling you how to do this and all that. But good for them. I think this is this is what hacking's all about, right? I'm not. Look, I don't believe you should steal from Apple or anybody. I'm not saying to steal.
Yeah.
But I think this is the spirit. This is how computers advance. This is the spirit, the true spirit of technology. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Laporte, the tech guy, 8888-ASK, Leo's my number. Talking about high tech. Did you see the new Amazon Music Store? Wow. Amazon came on the scene big time. You know, they've done Unbox before. They've done copy-protected music before. Not compelling. You know, If you know, the nice thing about iTunes, it's easy to use. It's very easy to buy music. It's copy protected in most cases. And so that's kind of a disadvantage. Amazon has created a new music store, the Amazon MP3 store. If you go to Amazon.com on the left under books, movie and music, you'll see MP3 downloads. These are very high quality, 256 kilobit VBR recorded MP3s without any copy protection. They say they have, I can't remember what it was. Was it a half a million songs? They have quite a few. Obviously, this is with the permissions of the record company, and that's the issue. Companies like EMI have been doing it all along, and Apple's got those unprotected. 256 kilobit AAC, which is, I think, better than 256 MP3, but both are pretty darn good, pretty close to the original. But Universal wouldn't do this on iTunes. Universal wanted to create a competitor to iTunes. They didn't like the fact that Apple had so much dominance in the music industry. The iTunes store is the number one online store, the number three of all music stores. It's huge. Very powerful. Universal said, we want to give somebody else a little clout in this sphere. So they went to Amazon. Now, admittedly, you're still buying through a web page, although there is an Amazon. In fact, you have to download the Amazon downloader and use it to download these. And if you're using iTunes, it will automatically copy it to iTunes. If you're using Windows Media Player, it will automatically copy it to your playlist there. All the album art's there, all the tags. I bought a few songs on there, a few albums on there. Thrilled. Couldn't be happier. And as good as iTunes is, it's really important that there be competition out there. And frankly, it's I think copy protection is such an evil scheme, such a bad thing, that I'm thrilled to see Amazon step up and say, okay, we're going to sell stuff without protection. And it runs on a Zune, and it runs on an iPod. It runs on a Sansa, and it runs on your phone. It runs on everything. I think this is great. I'd like to see more of this. And if you haven't tried it, you should give it a look. I mean, they've got tons of great artists on here. I'm afraid I've started to spend a lot of money buying stuff. By the way, it's a little cheaper. This is one of the issues. I think Apple sometimes comes off very arrogantly. The music companies went to Apple and said, look, we'd like to offer variable pricing. Charge more for new stuff, less for old stuff. Apple said, no. 99 cents, that's it. No. There is some variable pricing. Albums have variable pricing. But no, we're going to set the price, and that's what it's going to be. I think there's a reason for that. I think the reason is Apple can't afford to change the prices. Apple probably isn't making any money on iTunes, believe it or not. This week, a record company executive, the chairman of Vivendi, which is the French sewage treatment company that owns Universal. I'm not joking. That's their core business. He said, we are mad at iTunes. We are mad at iTunes because they are taking so much of our money. They only give us 70 cents on the dollar. What? 70 cents on the dollar. Now, remember, Apple has to pay the transaction fee to the credit card company. They're paying for the bandwidth. I bet when you do the math, Apple's making at best a couple of pennies per song, maybe not even that. We want more. 70 cents is not enough. Now, I wonder what Amazon's deal is. I think Universal probably had to give Amazon a better deal. But maybe not. Maybe Amazon was so anxious to get in this business, they gave them a good deal. For whatever reason, you get songs for 89 cents. There's albums for $8. Stevie Wonder, the definitive collection, $8.99 for that whole CD. I mean, this is pretty attractive. That's 21 songs. I mean, I think that, you know, I like it. I like it. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Let's get back to the phones. I'd love to hear what your thoughts are on the iPhone deal, on the Amazon store. Have you used it? Any technology at all. Let's talk to Brett. Brett's one of the early unlockers. Brett, you still using your iPhone?
Yeah, I'm actually on it right now, but I was calling to talk to you about the new BlackBerry.
You didn't update your iPhone then, huh?
You better believe I didn't, huh?
I'm surprised that, you know, people like Shuby updated his. I thought, Shuby, you knew that it was going to brick it. Why'd you do that?
What was he thinking?
So you've got a new BlackBerry.
Yeah, the new BlackBerry 8320, and I don't want to sound like a commercial, but it is a really cool phone.
Who's your carrier?
T-Mobile.
T-Mobile. And the 8320, is that the Curve, or what is that?
It's the Curve, but it's their special edition of the Curve that has the new UMA Wi-Fi calling. And what's so cool about that is two things. Number one, you can make calls now anywhere where previously you might have had a bad signal. All you have to do is have Wi-Fi, and you can make a call.
Wait a minute. It's voice over the internet?
Yeah.
And do they charge you for those calls?
There's two ways you can do it. It can either come out of your bucket of any time minutes, and then that's just a normal charge, or you can pay, I believe it's $9 extra per month to have unlimited.
Wow.
But why that? The reason that's so great is I know so many people who don't have great coverage where they live.
Right.
I literally know people have to stand out on their front lawn to make phone calls. And with this, now you can have a great signal in your basement if you want to.
Well, I've always been a BlackBerry fan, and I have to say now that with this iPhone stuff, I'm really thinking I want to go to a phone where I can add applications. I really miss the idea of being able to put applications on my iPhone or anything.
Yeah, have you heard the term this weekend, by the way, iBrick?
iBrick. Yeah, there are a lot of people who own iBricks. So, all right, I've really liked what BlackBerry's done. This is the 8320. Does it have a camera?
It does have a camera. It's got a 2-megapixel camera. But, I think the really huge feature is the ability to make calls over the internet.
Voice over the internet. Yeah. And you got to think that the phone companies hate this.
Well, you have to wonder, because I know that personally I'm going to probably cut my minute usage in half.
Right.
Because everywhere I'm making calls, I have Wi-Fi covered.
I wonder why T-Mobile is allowing this. Well, I mean, there's an example of a restrictive agreement with AT&T. Apple agreed to. You can't do that on your iPhone. But here you can with T-Mobile on a BlackBerry. Brett, great to talk to you. Thanks for the recommendation. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy.
The time is now 2 a.m. in Bakava, Belgian Congo.
Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's my number. We're talking about technology. And that could be a lot of different things. Of course, computers, the internet, cell phones. We talked a lot about the iPhone last hour. The iBrick for some people. Home theater. MP3 players, our GizWiz, our weekly GizWiz coming up in just a bit with Dick DiBartolo, Mad Magazine's maddest writer. But your calls is what I care about. And whatever you want to talk about in the digital realm, I'd love to talk with you about it. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. 8888-ASK-LEO. I was up a little late last night, not playing Halo 3. I'm showing some discipline. Yes, I got Halo 3 the minute it came out. And it's a wonderful, wonderful game. I've always liked Halo, especially the online gameplay, the LAN party aspect of it. It's great. But I'm holding off. I've played it just enough to get a real sense of it. Yeah, it's a first level or so. But, and it's fun. And the multiplayer is great. But I want to finish Bioshock before, so I stayed up late last night trying to finish Bioshock. I know, I'm behind. Interesting post by Don Reisinger in CNETnews.com, and I'd love to hear what you think about this. He says, Microsoft Vista is such a bomb, is such a turkey, is such a loser that Microsoft should abandon it. Don Reisinger writing at CNETnews.com. He also posted the digital home, and the full version of this is also at the digital home. While Vista was originally touted by Microsoft as the operating system savior we've all been waiting for, it has turned out to be one of the biggest blunders in technology, with a host of issues that are inexcusable and features that are taken from the Mac OS X and Linux playbook. Microsoft has once again lost sight of what we really want. As we're more than aware, Vista Ultimate comes at a premium for an additional $160 over the premium SKU, the SKU price. Ultimate gives you a complete backup and restore option, BitLocker drive encryption, the ever-so-popular Windows fax and scan, and the Ultimate Extras. But what started with a promise of extras by summer quickly turned into an apology from Microsoft and the eventual release of Dream Scene and Windows Hold'em. Microsoft's extras blunder is just another reason why the company must abandon Vista before it's too late. The first indicator, he says, is the sales figures. Vista's underperforming in U.S. retail, according to NPD. Sales are significantly lagging behind XP sales in its early days. Worse for Redmond, and we know this. We hear from people all the time who call the show. People who bought Vista are going back to XP. And I have to say, if you're a business, there is no reason to go to Vista. And that's where most of Microsoft's business comes from, is business. Vista gives you nothing but pain, heartache. I think this is a little extreme, but maybe he's got something, a point there. Is Vista a huge disappointment to you? Are you happy with it? I kind of like it. It's pretty. I'm running it. It's pretty. It's more secure. I think for novice users, it's probably a better choice than XP. It's much more secure. With Internet Explorer's protected mode and the UAC, the user access controls and all that. I think those are improvements. But that's why for business, it might not be such a good choice, because those things really do kind of maybe slow it down and limit you, and all the extra heavyweight stuff in there may not be a good thing for business. I don't know. I think if you're buying a new computer, you're going to get Vista, right? Should you not? Should you only have till January? Microsoft has told all the manufacturers, come January, you got to stop selling XP. This is it. Vista's it. Does that mean you should buy your computer now before it's too late and get XP? I don't know. You tell me. I could see. I do think if I were running a business, I would not be in any hurry to go to XP. But then I wouldn't have been in a hurry to go to Vista. I wouldn't have been in a hurry to go to XP from 2000. You never want to have the latest, greatest in business. You want the reliable, old standby. Let's talk about it. 8888-ASK-LEO. We can also talk about Apple's unconscionable decision to brick the iPhone. Maybe not illegal, but immoral, in my opinion. Wrong and bad business for Apple. Although, as I mentioned last hour, it's not my job to tell Apple what its business is. I'm not a businessman. I don't pretend to know what Apple should do for business. I'm speaking for users. It just seems to me that this is, if you bought an iPhone and said, hey, I want to put third-party apps on it. Hey, I want to use it with another carrier. And then Apple comes along and says, not only can you not do that, we're going to punish you by breaking your phone. That's unconscionable. Justin, Riverside, California, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Justin.
Hi. I have a question about my cell phone and about Halo 3.
Okie dokie.
What do you think about the Fuzik?
The Fuzik cell phone, F-U-Z-I-C?
Yeah.
Or the Future Music Network. What do you mean when you say the Fuzik?
Fuzik cell phone from a...
I have not played with it.
Oh, okay. Well, then never mind about that. I was just going to have...
I'll tell you this, though. If anybody who has... we're talking about the LG FUSIC cell phone. I think it's Sprint that's offering. If anybody has, love to know what you think about it. It's certainly pretty enough. I like LG cell phones.
I'm using it right now.
Oh, you give me your review then.
Oh, it's good, and I like how you can surf through all the menus while you're talking on the phone. Like my old phone, I had the same phone for about 6 years.
Right.
But
they're selling this to kids pretty much who want to listen to music on their phone. How's the music player?
I can take up to 7,000 pictures on this memory card.
Wow.
Too. That's cool. But turns off once in a while when I'm on the internet.
Ah.
And that bothers me.
Turns off like it just goes up. It just crashes, it sounds like.
It just restarts.
Yeah.
Like it goes.
Yeah, that's a crash. I would look for an update from LG to fix that. That's not unusual with newer phones that they have some bugs in them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I think LG will probably fix that. And just keep your eye peeled for updates.
And I beat Halo 3 in about 2 days.
That's fast.
Yeah, and it crushed me at the end. I was like, why? I'm not going to beat it yet.
No spoilers, dude. Now, don't tell me anything about what happens at the end. But I'll tell you what, in my opinion, Halo 3 single player is not what Halo 3 is all about.
No, it's about online play.
It's about the LAN party, the online play. It's about, you know, taking on 15 other guys and with rocket guns.
I don't even have Xbox 360. I just went to my girlfriend's house and I played it with
Your girlfriend's dad probably said, is Justin...
what was the question?
Is he still here? Is Justin still here? It's 3 in the morning. Yeah, he's playing Halo, Dad. But
he was playing with us.
Oh, he played too.
Yeah, he bought it for him. And then we were all playing. And me, my girlfriend, her dad, and her brother were like, what the F? You know, it's just like, this sucks. But just the story mode that had, the ending wasn't the happiest moment. So
Did you guys play 4-player cooperative to finish it?
No, we just did 2-player.
2-player. I wonder if it's easier in cooperative mode to finish it than to do it by yourself.
Sometimes. We put it on Legendary, though.
Oh, you did? Oh, you're good.
We tried to. It was, some levels were ridiculous hard.
Yeah.
On Legendary. It was wow. But it was fun.
I don't want you to give us any spoilers, but when you said the ending made you sad, it made you sad because it was over?
It's officially very, very over. I'm going to put it that way.
Yeah. Oh, I hope the universe doesn't end.
Don't say anything.
Don't say anything.
Nothing. But
I'll get in trouble. I said one thing, not even about the end of BioShock, and people got mad at me for spoilers. So I don't want to say anything. But I have to say, this game really has kind of infinite playability. If it's anything like the original Halo and Halo 2, You might play through the game single player or in cooperative mode just to get to the end to see what happens. But really, the whole point of games like this is picking a level and playing against other players, either in Capture the Flag or you play Slayer where you're, you know, it's just mano a mano. That's what's fun. And to do it either, you know, you could do it in a group, either on one screen or in a LAN party mode, or you can do it on Xbox Live. And man, that is fun. And I'm not even a huge fan of shoot 'em ups, to be honest with you. I kind of like more strategic games, but it is fun. And I'm not even very good at it. I usually get wiped out by these, especially by kids. But that's really what Halo 3 is all about, I think. Most successful launch in history, not of video games, in entertainment history. 1.7 million copies sold in the first, whatever, day or two. I think they made $170 million. That's bigger than Harry Potter, bigger than anything, bigger than Titanic. The biggest launch in history. They expect to sell, well, I think they'll probably break this. They were saying they thought they would sell 4 million in the first month. I think they're probably, or first 2 months, I think they'll probably go beyond that. They're already at 2 million. It's a billion-dollar franchise. That is how big gaming has become. And you heard Justin say, who bought it? Dad bought it. Dad bought it. It's not just for kids. More of your calls to come. I am Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Guy. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. Now they're speculating in the chat room about what happens at the end of Halo 3. I don't know. Like I said, I haven't really been following the story. In fact, I never get to the end of these games. I don't have the time. And somebody said that the Halo 2 ending is, you know, bizarre and anticlimactic, and then I don't know. See, I never got to the end, so I don't know. I'm not following. In fact, I kind of read the story and I thought, wow, that's what's going on? This is weird. I just thought it was shooting. Just, you know, they're aliens. You got to kill them. That's just what we do. Tony in Moreno Valley, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Tony.
Hello, Mr. Leo.
Hello, Mr. Tony.
All right. Hey, this is the first time I call, but I'm going to buy an iMac computer, the 2.0.
Beautiful computers.
Oh, I've seen it at Best Buy. Yeah. But my question is, they were telling me that if I wanted to run Windows, I'd have to get a program called Parallel. But why would I want to run Windows if I'm buying?
Tony, if you have to ask that question, you don't need to. It's just for some people who want to have Windows apps they need to run or want to run or whatever. But yeah, it's a available feature. You don't need it.
Oh, okay. And I heard you on one show that you were talking about the eyesight that they have on those computers.
Yes.
Is there a problem with that?
Not at all. They're very good.
Oh, okay.
They stopped selling, maybe what you heard was they stopped selling the standalone eyesight camera, and people loved that camera. But you don't need it, because and the reason they stopped selling is they built it in now.
Yeah, it's a beautiful machine, and when I saw
it's gorgeous.
It just works perfectly, and also nervous about the Intel, you know, being an Intel chip, but I don't know, maybe because I hear so much about, you know, Intel. I thought they had their own.
No, they don't. They never did. They used to use chips made by IBM and Motorola called the PowerPC chips. Those really, you know, I have to say, when they first announced about 2 years ago, oh, we're going to Intel, I freaked out. I panicked. I said, this is crazy. What are you doing to me, Apple? I don't want you to do this. No. Kicking and screaming. Boy, was I wrong. And now here we are 2 years later. We're looking. Intel's making these fantastic, low-power, very fast chips. Whatever happened to the PowerPC? There's nothing much going on there. Apple had to make the choice. I think they saw the roadmap and they said, look, we've got to make the shift. It was painful in many ways. But now there are advantages. First of all, the Intel chips are faster. You can get these Core Duos. You can get four-way chips even. And they happen to run Windows quite well if you need to run Windows. It's one of the advantages Apple's have is that you can run OS X, but you can also run Windows, and you can also run Linux. So you can kind of do anything you want with them. I run, you know, by the way, I don't recommend Parallels anymore. There's a competitor that's been around for a long time and makes a fantastic program that does pretty much the same thing called VMware and VMware Fusion. And that's a, it's a little bit faster. It sees multiple processors. It's better with the 3D graphics card. I'm using Parallels right now because that's what I bought. But I also bought a copy of VMware. VMware is they've done a very good job. So, but you're right, Tony. If you if you ask the question, why would you want to do that? Then you don't need to do it. Don't even bother. Yeah. Save your money.
It was just, I was looking at it and it kept, oh yeah, if you want to run Windows, you do this. And they made it.
That's because I'll tell you what happens. People who are using Windows right now start to think, the virus is, maybe I should go to, maybe I'll get a look at a Mac, but that's kind of, I don't know, I'm nervous about it. I don't know if I, what about my software? And so they go in there and the Apple guy says, well, don't worry, it's going to be okay because you can still run Windows. It's going to be, they patch you and they say, it's going to be okay. And so the Windows people go, oh, okay. They buy the Mac and they never use Windows again. They don't. It's just to make you feel better about the fact that you could if you needed to. And that's facetious. I mean, to be completely serious, there are people who have programs that just don't, they're not available on the Mac. You want to keep using that program, you can. Unless it's a game. Games don't run really well in VMware or Parallels. You have to. But then you just use Boot Camp, which is the third way of running Windows on a Mac, Apple's own Boot Camp, which is free. And then you boot into Windows, and it's just as good as a Windows machine. Hey, I got to take Peter because he's calling all the way from New Zealand. Hey, Peter.
Hey, how's it going, Leo?
It's great to hear from you. One of the most beautiful countries in the world. I'm dying to get down there.
You got to make it sometime.
I've got to. I have friends who've done walkabouts in New Zealand. They went from hut to hut to hut, and they just said it's the most, one of the most beautiful things they've ever done.
Yeah,
it's my dream. So what can I do for you? First of all, I'm glad you listen. You must listen to the podcast.
Listen to the podcast and all your other ones.
Thank you.
All that. We're actually in Huntington now because my mom lives in Huntington. I went to high school here.
Oh, all right. Cool.
So we came to do a bit of shopping.
Oh, you're going to buy an iPhone, aren't you?
Bought it last night.
Okay, here's the deal.
So I don't want...
Here's the deal. You can still crack it. Just don't update to 1.1.1.
Okay, so it doesn't search out for Wi-Fi or anything like that to update automatically.
Thank goodness, Apple hasn't gone so far as to do it without your permission.
Right, excellent.
So what will happen is, you, as far as I know, and I don't think they've started selling them with 1.1.1 on it, in which case you wouldn't be able to crack it. But you'd know right away because the crack wouldn't work. It's probably still got 1.0.2 on it.
Last night, and they said, no, it's still the 1.0 version.
Okay. So you would, and it's, Shuby's got it on his page. There's a lot of different places you can go.
Yeah, we heard Dev Software or something.
Yeah, I use Independence, which is a great program to crack it, and then the IonLock software. You'll have to do some downloads, do some command lines. It's not difficult. It takes about 20 minutes. The key, though, once you've done this, is you the next time you try to sync up, iTunes will say, hey, there's an update. You want to install it? Don't. Say no, and say, don't ask me again. And your iPhone will be fine. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Thanks for calling, Peter. Carbonite automatic secure computer backup over the internet. Try it free at carbonite.com. It's time for the weekly Gizwiz. Leo Laporte, the tech guy here from the beautiful Tech Guy Labs in Northern California, all the way to the East Coast and New York, New York, where Mad Magazine's maddest writer, Dick DiBartolo, dwells. And he is a gadget hound, a freak of nature. In fact, he has not one, but two talking heads in his
three. I have a howling head, which is the chimpanzee.
Okay,
don't forget the chimpanzee. And then I have,
you have Elvis, talking Elvis.
And then we have,
what's that?
Oh, well, he's talking about one of our daily podcasts. This is Squawkers McCall, who's a fur real friend. Fur spelled F-U-R.
Basically,
fur real
a plastic pet is what you're saying.
Oh, well, that's sort of demeaning.
Plastic talking pet.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, I have a real dog, too. So
yeah.
There you go.
Oh, there you go. But no, this looks like a... I'm looking at it on the website. This is from Hasbro.
It's from Hasbro.
And it looks like a parrot.
Yes. Well, a macaw is a parrot. It's a kind of a parrot.
I didn't know that.
This
I can barely hear him. Okay.
Oh, let me see. Can you repeat after me? Hello, squawkers. Now he started to. Let me see if I can pet him. I'm petting
his
head.
Hold him right up to the microphone because he's
okay. Oh, squawkers. Oh, he's not doing anything now.
Yeah, it's funny because real life animals do this too. I wouldn't have thought they'd have built that into a machine.
I love Dickie. Oh. I loathe Leo.
Hey.
Oh, yeah. And squawkers, what's your favorite podcast netcast?
Daily Giz Whiz.
Oh, that's pretty good. Now, is he flapping? I hear something going on. Is he flapping his wings when he talks?
No, he's not flapping his wing. His eyes are opening and closing.
Wow.
His wings stay still.
So basically, he has all the personality of a Mr. Lincoln ride at Disneyland.
Well, he can dance to music.
Can he?
And he has built-in music, or he has a microphone, the same microphone that lets you give him commands and do the repeat mode, can pick up music and make him dance to it. And he has play me some music. Oh. He has a built-in music of his own in case you don't. So he's
this is a growing category of kind of it's robots, aren't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. Wowie does the more upscale.
That's the Elvis and the gorilla one you have.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And we're talking like Elvis, I think, is $300.
Whoa.
Yeah, I know. And this guy's 79. Yeah, under $80.
Not cheap, but still pretty cool. I mean, is it life size, parrot size? I mean,
yeah, he's about 10 or 11 inches high. And actually, his wings open and close a little. I was wrong. They don't like flap. But,
right.
And he sits on a perch. And yeah, I think kids would find him entertaining, especially since he can do multiple things.
Does he know? Yes, I can do two things in one. Does he know you're in the vicinity? I mean, how does he?
Yes, he had. I forgot to tell some friends who came by last night. He has a thing called hangout mode, and when you walk by, he knows you're there, and he'll let out a parrot squeak. And this person nearly drowned themselves in the glass of wine they were carrying because you don't expect it.
Can you imagine what it's like going over to Dick's place?
Leo, I tell you, when I got the gorilla, that was the very first thing from Wowie, the gorilla head.
That's scary.
I didn't know he had light senses. And at 4 a.m., I make a night call to the restroom.
Oh, that's terrifying.
And this thing lets out a gorilla holler. Well, I hit the back wall of the bathroom at about 90 miles an hour.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it's got to be a real treat walking through Dick's place. Because you don't get rid of anything. This all just accumulates. There's layers.
No, it goes to the gadget warehouse.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I mean, it never goes to the street. That would be terrible.
No, can't do that with Squawker's Macaw.
Not Squawker's Macaw.
Dick is heard every week on this show. It's the Weekly Gizwiz, and every day, Monday through Friday, on my netcast network, twit.tv, with a daily Gizwiz. But really, he's best known as Mad Magazine's maddest writer. You've probably seen him on World News Now with his gadgets. Used to be on Regis and Kathy Lee. And you also can go to his website, gizwiz.biz, where he's got a great contest to win autographed copies of Mad Magazine, the What the Heck Is It contest. And I hear you're now selling.
He's still talking. Yeah, match game question. So
that's
if you don't
so cool.
Website, you can go to just matchgamequestions.com.
I don't know if the radio audience knows, but you were the writer for the match game for years.
I wrote the match game for 18 years. And, it was a straight show when I went there. The show got canceled. I said to Goodson, how about we write crazy questions like Mary liked to pour gravy on John's blank? And. Goodson said, you know, Dick, you could do what you want, because the show's got 6 weeks to run and they can't cancel it twice. And I started writing those questions, and lo and behold, it got picked up year after year after year.
You wrote something like 40,000 questions, right?
About 40,000 questions.
Wow.
And after the Game Show Network special that I was on, I was in the warehouse and I found a box of questions, a couple hundred. So I thought, I'm going to put them up on my website and see if people want to buy some.
I'm sure they will. How much is it?
I'm going to sell three original questions for $19.99 because $20 is too much, don't you think?
I think so. And you'll autograph them for us?
I'm going to autograph the front of each one just so people can Xerox them and pass them off as original questions.
I think that I grew up on the Match Game. That's just a classic. I would love to have that. Go to, is it matchgamequestions.com?
MatchGameQuestions.com or Gizwiz.biz, and right on the opening page, you'll see the Match Game logo, and right next to that is a link to Match Game Questions.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you and Squawkers McCaw wander off. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week, Dick.
I'll be here.
Let's get back to the phones. 8888 Ask Leo is the phone number. We're talking about iPhone bricking, Halo 3. Should Vista be dumped? Should Microsoft say... Just, say, well, that was a flop. Let's back to the drawing board. Jason's on the line, Raleigh, North Carolina. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo, what's going on?
How you doing? I'm doing well.
I'm doing well. Thanks, sir. I had a quick question for you.
Yeah.
As I am an avid listener of many of your podcasts, this past week I've heard you talking about the new website, Mint.com.
Yes.
And so that was sort of what my question was about, was your overall feeling about the online money management options that are currently out there.
You know, when I first looked at Mint, I was really impressed, and I love the idea of Mint. I think what Mint does is very cool. Just to fill people in, it's a free service at mint.com. And by the way, this should send up a red flag when I say this. You give them the logins to all your financial accounts, your credit cards, your bank accounts, your savings accounts, your investment accounts. They collect the data from those accounts, aggregate it, and then say things like, hey, you might have noticed you're spending an awful lot eating out this week. Is that normal? Or you could save more money if you had a Discover card. That's, by the way, how they make money. I don't have any problems with that. In fact, I think some of the predictive stuff and the informational stuff is very useful. They do graphs and bar charts. My issue is that little thing, give them logins to all your financial accounts.
Mm-hmm. And I totally understand why that could be an issue. So I'm curious, have you tried out a comparable service called Wasabi?
I have not. Is it wasabi.com?
Yes, sir. WESABE.com.
Oh, not like, okay, WESABE. Like Wesabi, we know.
Yes. Okay. Wesabi, yeah.
Wesabi.
It's sort of a...
Same idea,
with a social network aspect, very Web 2.0.
Do you give them, what information do you give them?
Well, you give them your bank data and this, that, and the other. But
how do you give them that? You give them the login?
There's a couple of ways. You can either manually upload it yourself to their servers, but what happens is they eliminate any personally identifying information. Or they now have a new Firefox extension where you can sort of set up little actions where it'll sort of record you going into your account and where you enter in logs.
These things are all a terrible, terrible, terrible idea. Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I'll give you a number of reasons. You could use Quicken and Microsoft Money and do much of the same thing locally without putting this information out on the internet. You're giving this information to a third party. Now, I know they have elaborate third-party privacy policies and terms of use. Mint is verified by trustee, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. However, and if you look at the contracts, in almost every case, and John C. Dvorak gets credit for pointing this out, in almost every case, the contract will say something like, subject to change at any time without notice.
Sure.
They have to. They have to do that because they can't say, well, forever, we're never, ever, ever going to change our policies.
Right.
At some point, Rupert Murdoch or somebody could come along and say, guys, I'm going to give you $4 billion for your company. All I want is to preserve the database that you've got on all of your users and keep the integrity of that. And there's nothing to stop them from selling your information. Right now, I'm sure they're honest and good and wonderful people, but they've got lots of stuff on you. Personally, they say we don't save any identifying information, but I guarantee you it can be reconstructed from your logins. There's nothing to say they can't at some point go down the road, sell that stuff to somebody you don't want to have it. Furthermore, for we know very well that these sites get hacked all the time. Now, they could say we've done everything possible to protect your security. I'm sure they do. But that doesn't mean they won't get hacked. Or they won't have a disgruntled employee. Or they are... It just is a bad idea to share this information.
No, I smell what you're stepping in. Do you have a recommendation for a software like Quicken, except it's for the Mac? Because from what I understand, the version of Quicken for the Mac is horrible.
Yeah, Quicken's kind of gone downhill. It's not horrible on the Mac, but it's not the same as it used to be. There are some really good Macintosh money management programs out there. They're not as developed yet as Quicken. And and I think that is kind of a problem. However, it doesn't make it okay to give these guys your information. The one I know these guys, and I really love what they've done, is Cha-Ching. And I think they're I met them at Macworld last year, and I just was so impressed with them. There are other programs like it's only $15. There are other programs like that. There's some free ones as well. I'd love to hear your recommendations and anybody's recommendations because I'd like to find it myself. What's the best Mac money management program? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. We're having fun talking about tech. That's the thing I love to do every weekend. I'm glad you're here doing it with me. 8888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO. Cha-Ching is the Mac money management program I was talking about. C-H-A-C-H-I-N-G. Like a cat. Cha-Ching. And it's from midnightapps.com. And you can try before you buy. There are a lot of other Mac money manager programs. None of them yet as complete. And the real issue is none of them do what Quicken and Microsoft Money and Mint and Wasabi do, which is automatically link up with your bank and get your information. And frankly, I think that's kind of a necessity. I don't want a website to do it for me, but I really want software to do it so I don't have to enter in data. That's why I stopped using these programs years ago. I was sitting down and every month I'd have to enter in all my transactions from my bank statement. No, thank you. And fortunately, most banks now offer some form of downloadable data. And the problem is that depending on the bank and depending on the software, there's better or worse integration. And that's, to me, that's key. So that's our question is, what's the Mac money manager that gives you best integration with your bank data? Kind of automatically entering in your data. That's if it doesn't do that, I don't want to know about it. Or it's not going to help me anyway. Tom, Tucson, Arizona, Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Welcome, Tom.
Hey, Leo, I'm a new listener, and I've got a 4-port router, and all of a sudden developed a need for a 5/5 port. I do have an extra router. Can they be cascaded?
Yes.
And as a second thing, where can a person get or buy or new XP. I need an OEM version of the software.
Somebody just told me, by the way, in the chat room, and I haven't verified it yet, that Microsoft has just agreed to allow OEMs to sell XP for an additional 5 months. So clearly Microsoft is hearing the call of users who say, we don't want Vista! Let me answer your first question first, and that is cascading routers. Really what you're going to be doing is, in effect, adding a hub, a dumb router. You can buy any router if you've got an existing router. The key is you put that second router in what they call bridge mode. You're telling that second router, don't you mess with IP addresses. Don't you do what they call DHCP. No NAT translation. Just let the first router handle all of the address assignments, all of the routing. You just kind of pass it along.
Okay, will a switch work?
Switch will work.
Okay, I've got an extra switch too.
That's exactly what a switch is for.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. So I just took that up to one of the ports of the router.
Yep. And what a switch is used for technically, it's so funny. I mean, here we are, home users, doing what was traditionally the bailiwick just a few years ago of the, you know, advanced IT professional, the sysadmin who really knew this stuff. You know, it's amazing. All a switch is designed to do is to segment a network. So, and it actually makes the network more efficient. It says anything on this side of the switch, you know, you send this traffic this way. Anything on the other side of the switch, you send the traffic that way. And so it eliminates collision or reduces collisions and makes the network more efficient. A switch is exactly what you want. And in fact, that's what you're telling the router to be when you're saying, don't do DHCP, be a switch.
Okay, and thank you very much. And for XP, just go out on the net and see what I can find.
Yeah, or... I mean, a lot of companies, Newegg.com will sell you XP still in an OEM version. You can always get it on eBay. Be careful. What you don't want is a copy of XP that's already been activated. And people will do that to you, and that's mean.
I see computers at yard sales sometimes with XP on them and still a sticker and a book and everything. Is it possible to purchase one of those and call Microsoft and tell you scrapping the computer and move
yeah,
it to
if
yours?
You get, make sure you get the disk, though. That's the key. You got to get the disk.
Okay.
And Microsoft usually will let you do that, absolutely. Because, you know, you've got the serial number, you've got the disk, you're legitimate. You've legitimately purchased XP. And, in fact, I believe their license agreement allows for, at least it used to allow for that. Provided the original version was deleted or no longer in use.
Well, will that be a restore disk, though? That's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah,
that
probably will be. And so you have to be very careful. Your best bet, if you can, is to get it shrink wrapped, you know, with a holograph on it, and then unused. The risk is, well, there are some really unscrupulous system vendors who will buy a system with XP, strip the XP disk off of it. It's an OEM version. Sell the system. And whoever activates first is going to win because you've got two people with the same copy of Windows. And if the guy with the computer activates it first, then the guy who bought the disk isn't going to be able to activate his, and vice versa. And that's very unscrupulous. Unfortunately, it happens in a lot. So go to Newegg.com. They're reliable. They're you know, eBay's a little risky because you just don't know who you're getting it from. But Newegg is good.
Right. I bought from them before. Well,
yeah.
Thank you very much for your good answers.
You're welcome, Tom. I'm glad you listened. Keep listening. Tell your friends. We're on in your neck of the woods now. Joe in Albuquerque, New Mexico, another new station. Hello, Joe.
Leo, pleasure talking with you.
Great to have you on the show.
My sister had an older Dell machine, and she has a daughter who likes to play video games and things. And so I bought her a new machine, and I went to one of the major chain stores that sells electronics and shopped about five different brands in there. I was looking for the best value with components and clock speed and RAM and such. And I settled on an HP product, a Pavilion, I think it's a 1735A is what it's called.
Okay.
Came with 2 gigs of fast DDR and a 320 gig hard drive,
right.
An AMD 5000 plus, and some other nice features, a DVD
Sounds great.
Writer. And,
how much did you pay for that?
I only paid about $840.
Great deal.
Sale.
Great deal.
And without a monitor, but I had a nice flat screen for her. Okay. So my question is, since she's started using it, it's incredibly slow. It's really it's slower than anything I've ever seen. It's got the Vista Home Preferred or whatever it's called on it.
Boy, that shouldn't be slow.
I didn't think so either. And so I checked with the vendor, with the store, and I found out the hard way that they don't really have their own techs there. They kind of shop out the or outsource the technical support to guys that rent space from them in there. They do disavow any knowledge of each other.
That's terrible. I mean, I would try restoring the system. We got to run. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. With GoToMeeting Web Conferencing, everyone can see your computer desktop on their computer screen. It's changing the way we do business. Try it free for 30 days. Go to GoToMeeting.com, click the orange Try It Free button, use my name, Leo, as the promo code.
The time is now 2 a.m. in Bukava, Belgian Congo.
Time for the Tech Guy, Leo Laporte. I am the Tech Guy, wherever and whatever you're listening to. This is the time we talk about technology. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. I mean, technology could be anything, by the way, from cell phones to camcorders to MP3 players, of course, to Vista and OS X and XP and the internet, Web 2.0. We're talking to a caller just before the end of the last hour, and I'm sorry we had to rush out of that. He had bought an HP, a very fast HP, 2 gig RAM and AMD. He didn't say which AMD chips, but I presume it's late model. It's going to be pretty darn fast, 2+ gigahertz. And he said the thing is slow as molasses. Why? And if you haven't added anything out of the box, I mean, if you're still just using the computer as it came, if it was bad the day, from day one, then there's something wrong with it. And you should take it back. Say it's a lemon. This is slow. There's lots of things that could cause a computer to be slow if it's malfunctioning, particularly a bad hard drive, flaky hard drive. Computer spends a lot of time trying to read from the hard drive. It'll slow everything down. And I'm not crazy about HP, but I don't think that their products are such low quality that they should be slow as molasses out of the box. You might strip off, you know, some of the additional software. They put an awful lot of software on there, but I have to think there's something wrong with it, right? And it's still in warranty. Take it back. It's a lemon. 8888 Ask Leo is the number. 8888 Ask Leo. That's 888-827-5536. We're talking about Halo 3. Apple's decision to basically scorched earth the iPhone users who had the temerity, who dared to hack their iPhone to unlock it. Apple's punitive action, turning that phone into a useless and very expensive brick. We're talking about Don Reisinger at CNET.com saying, hey, Microsoft should just abandon Vista. It's a flop. It's terrible. Get out before it's too late. Get out. Get out. 8888 Ask Leo or anything that's on your mind we could talk about. I'm starting with Mitchell in Sherman Oaks, California, listening on the great KFI. Hello, Mitchell.
Hey, Leo. I'm kind of stingy about my current system, even though it's a dinosaur, because I'm saving up to build a super system.
So
I'm really the last minute of operation out of this thing, even though it's so old. And I was wondering, is it possible that I got a virus or a worm on one of my hard drives that would have corrupted the boot sector of both?
Well, there's only one boot sector. It's only the only drive that has a boot sector is the master drive.
Well, here's my problem. My problem is that I have tried every single thing under the sun to try and get these hard drives back online, and no matter what I set as the master, no matter what I set as the slave, even if I use alternate jumper settings,
neither of them will boot up.
Correct.
Okay.
So my question to you is, if I get another drive, is there a way that I can try and repair these by putting them as the slave once I get a new drive?
Well, yeah, oh, absolutely. The question is, what's wrong with them? So you've installed Windows, tried installing Windows on both these drives, and it won't boot up after the install? Does the install fail? What exactly happens?
It won't even recognize them. It will only recognize them if they're installed in a very unusual configuration. At this point, I can't even remember what that configuration is.
So when you boot up, when you first turn on the computer and it shows that, you know, green text or white text on the black background, it says, you know, what drives you have attached, do they show up there?
They show up there, okay. But when I boot from them, it says that something's wrong with the boot sector. Giving me sector error message.
Okay. Yeah, if you set it up as a secondary drive, in other words, I mean, one thing, there's data on those drives you want to save, it sounds like.
No, I just want to save. I just want to be able to use the drive. Like,
okay, you don't mind erasing them?
Yeah, I don't care.
Okay.
Don't care.
Well, what I would try is connect one up to the master, jumper. Are they SATA or IDE drives? They're older run. So the IDE. So make sure they're jumpered properly for master. Anyone, either one of them. And then put a Windows install disk in and form, you know, partition and format the drive and put Windows on it. And
now, I buy this new drive and I...
You don't need a new... Well, I would say before you buy a new drive, do that.
It won't work. It won't take any...
So you're saying you put the Windows install disk and you try to... Will it format the drive?
No.
What happens?
I try to make it. I try to force it to boot off the CD, the XP Pro CD, and it gives me a similar kind of error message. It says,
"Okay,
not reading CD."
Yeah. Okay, so you can't even boot from a CD.
No.
All right. So it's not the drives. Your controller's in trouble.
Oh, not the drive.
Yeah, if you can't even boot from a CD, and you have it set in your BIOS to boot from the CD, right?
Correct.
And it tries to boot and says, I can't, oh, I'm trying, I can't boot. There's something wrong with your controller. Now, the good news is, I understand you want to keep this thing alive as long as you can. The good news is you can go and buy an inexpensive drive controller, Promise controller, $20 or $30. And run everything off of that. But it sounds like on your it sounds like the motherboard drive controller's messed up. Make sure you're jumpering properly. It could be the cable. You might just try a new fresh cable. The cable's crimped or broken or whatever. But if you can't boot the CD, well, it's not the drives. You can't even boot a CD. There's something wrong with your cable or your controller. You got to track that down. I wouldn't mess with the drives. The drives are probably fine. And I certainly wouldn't buy a new drive at this point because you're going to have the same problem with that. Your controller's gone bad. Jeff, Austin, Texas. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi, Leo. Long-time listener, first-time caller, as usual.
Welcome. I'm glad you called.
And I got a question about the new Windows Home servers that are coming out.
Yes.
I'm really excited about them. I've got two PCs at home, but I also have a Mac.
Okay.
And I'd like to somehow, and I haven't been able to find anything saying if it works with the Mac or if there's some way to use Windows Home Server along with the Mac, because I know it can back up the entire...
As long as you have a Windows machine to manage, maintain, and interface with Windows Home Server, which you do, the Mac will be just fine. Remember, you can't run... Windows Home Server has a client program that runs on the PC. That will not run on your Mac, obviously. But
right. But
you will be able to share files, see files, copy files, and so forth, because the Mac supports the Samba, Windows file sharing. It supports SMB. So you won't have any trouble at all with that.
Oh, that would be great.
There's some things you won't be able to do that... you would be able to do on a Windows machine. But as far as the backup and the file sharing and the seeing files, no problem.
Oh,
yeah,
great.
I think this is going to be a great product. I don't know if they're going to find an audience because there aren't many people like you, Jeff, who get it, who get what this is even.
Mm-hmm.
They say, well, wait a minute, I'm buying a computer, but I can't use it? Where's the keyboard? Where's the monitor? Where's the mouse? And they don't understand. No, it's a computer, yeah, but it's a backup system. It's a centralized server.
And it's something where you can just, leave it and let it go once you got it set up.
Right.
And doing it and probably barely any troubleshooting. I don't know how it will be once it does come out.
Everybody who's played with it, and of course we do a Windows podcast, Paul Thurrott, who's had his extensive experience with it, says it's really great. Now, there are, if you want guaranteed full compatibility, there are a lot of network-attached storage devices that are similar. They don't have all the functionality of Windows Home Server, but we'll do things like they'll even run as iTunes servers and media servers, and obviously for backup and sharing, they'll work fine. But I think Windows Home Server will be very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, as far as I know, it's using standards Windows networking standards, so it's not going to... they won't have any problems connecting to the Mac. It's only running any of that special software and any specialized stuff. But I think but as a backup, it'll always be fine.
That's great.
Yeah.
Hey, can I give you a link?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, it's my my website that I shared with my deceased partner. It's www.carldavidgaley, that's carldavidgaley.org.
And what's on the site? What do you do?
This is a, well, as I said, my partner died on August 24th.
Oh, I'm sorry. So is it a memorial site?
It is a memorial site.
What a nice idea.
I put in, previously it was just a blog for both of us to kind of share, but then when after he died, I turned this into a memorial for him.
What a beautiful idea. Do people come and put comments? And?
Yeah, I've had a couple comments. I've asked people to send me some memories so I can put them
what a nice idea.
Memory section and have pictures. And I'm doing this all in iWeb. And yeah, I know it's kind of, you're stuck once you hit iWeb.
But you know, that's fine because eventually this site is just going to be static. It's not, you know, you're probably not going to turn it back into a blog. It's a memorial site. So I think that's actually a very appropriate use for it. That's neat. I thank you for sending us the link, and I think that's a really neat idea. Really neat idea. Thank you, Jeff. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Rajiv, I didn't mean you. I guess one of the ads that I do on the show talks about calling for tech support to some foreign guy. And Rajiv, who's in our chat room, apparently is a Dell support tech. He says, you mean me? No, I don't mean. I'm talking about that other guy. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the phone number. 8888-ASK-LEO. Rob is on the line from Palm Springs, California. Hey, Rob. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Leo.
How are you, sir?
I am very well. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Good. You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
I have a laptop that's 5 years old. It's been a stalwart in my business.
Yes.
And I've religiously done backups using external 2.5-inch hard drive. My question is I now want to upgrade the internal 60 gig to like about 120.
Yeah.
What is it that you have to do? Because I know on desktops you used to hook up the ribbon connectors to each drive at the same time, and then you do use a program.
Yeah, you can't really do that with a laptop, obviously. There's nowhere to put that second drive. So what you're going to have to do really is pull the and by the way, on most laptops this is fairly easy, but it's not easy on all laptops. But if you have is it a Dell or a Toshiba?
No, it's a Toshiba.
Yeah, Toshiba has a little, you know, the port on the bottom. You unscrew it, and the laptop, the hard drive's right there. Obviously,
yes.
You've powered it down, and you've unplugged it, and you pull it, and you put the new one in, and it's going to be blank. You're going to have to do a restore on it.
I see.
And what you'll do with the second drive now is you can get a external case for it and make it a USB drive, or, you know, I went out and bought from Newer Tech. They make a I think it's $40. It's for one time use only. It's just the connectors and even a power supply that you can connect a laptop or a desktop drive to and make it a USB drive for temporary purposes only, because there's no case and you don't want to leave a drive just kind of out and exposed. But for one time only, just to copy the files over, that'll work. So that's kind of the other possibility. If you had a desktop, you could put both the new drive and the old drive in and do a bit copy, an image copy from the old to the new, and get it to be exactly the same. But you'd need you couldn't do it in a laptop. You couldn't do it in a laptop. Obviously, you'd have to do it in a desktop.
All right, well, that's good news.
Yeah,
because at least I own one.
Yeah, there you go. Now, the thing about laptop
drives,
you're welcome. I appreciate the call. The thing about laptop drives to understand is that they don't get their power the same way a desktop does. You know, if you've ever looked at an internal drive, the old IDE drives had an IDE data connector, and then they had a separate power connector. The new SATA drives, power and data often are in the same connector, and on the laptop drives, they are on the same connector. So you have to get an adapter that has a connector for the power tail and a connector for the IDE cable, and it goes directly to the drive. So you'll need a special adapter or a special cable to do that, to put it in a desktop. But that's totally doable. Totally doable. We've got some lines open now. 8888 Ask Leo. If you've been hanging on and wanted to get on the show, and now's a chance. Let's go to Victorville, California, and say hello to Brian. Hello, Brian. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing okay. The reason I'm calling you is I got a new computer a while ago, and it, you know, I was real excited about having the Vista on it. And I listen to you very sparingly. I love to when I can. And I think when I first, last time I listened to you, you were talking about having Vista, the trial version of it, and you were testing it and running it. And now that I got it, I hear all you saying about how Vista is actually not doing very well.
I don't have any problems with Vista. A lot of people seem to.
I'm one of those people. I'm still very optimistic about it. But the main reason I'm calling is that I run Flash 8 Professional Edition, and you know, it's. Are you very familiar with how Flash works?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, just kind of working on websites and whatnot. That's what I do on the side. But the biggest thing is just it has like continual, like, it's temporary crashes going into movie clips.
Really?
Like almost the point where I selected to go into movie clip, and what happens is, it's not that it crashes, but have you ever used Photoshop, obviously, and you know when you want to crop something, that little dotted line square goes around what you're choosing?
Yeah.
Well, it kind of actually has that, and when I click into movie clip, it something like that kind of comes up, and it slowly shrinks, like it's kind of slowly delaying going into the movie clip. Like it's like
It sounds like a bug in. It could be a bug in Flash 8. I would check with Adobe and see if there's an update to it for Vista. This is you know, when you're talking about Vista, these are the kinds of problems you're seeing. They're basically compatibility issues, and that. Particular area, it doesn't surprise me. Vista's had a lot of issues with video cards, video card drivers, video playback software, and that's kind of what you're doing here. Even though you know, you're working within Flash, you're creating Flash documents, but that little handle has to modify kind of video on the fly. I think it's either related to Flash itself, a problem with Flash itself, or your video driver. And boy, we're hearing a lot of those with Vista. The people who have trouble with Vista are exactly these people who have compatibility issues. Older software, older hardware not working with Vista. When you stick within the, you know, realm of Vista, you only use Microsoft programs that are updated to work with Vista, or you only use programs that are designed for Vista, things seem to work pretty well. It's the compatibility that's a problem. This is always a problem when you go to a major operating system upgrade, I might point out. But and I have to say, it's been a year now. Vista went to gold almost exactly a year ago. And if these problems are still going on, that might bode poorly for Microsoft. You know, they just announced they're going to support or allow XP sales through June of next year. I think that's a hint that people are not happy. They're not happy with Vista. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Unlimited local and long distance calling for less than $20 a month. Call 888-60-POWER. That's 888-60-POWER. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Woo-hoo! 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number to call. We are talking digital technology, and there's so many things we could talk about right now. All sorts of stuff between the iBrick, Halo 3, Vista. You know, it's funny, Vista's pretty, and it's Windows, and it does a lot, you know, it does some things better than the old Windows did, and it's certainly prettier, but people want compatibility, and this is really the bind that Microsoft is in, isn't it? They'd like to innovate. I know they would. They're smart guys. They'd like to change the world. They make something really new and different. There's a problem with that. If they innovate too much, it's incompatible. If they make it too secure, it's incompatible. They can't go too far down that road. And so, you know, they're trying to make something new, exciting, and different. If they had released Vista and it looked just like XP and worked just like XP, nobody would have bought it. So they had to make some changes, and now that's where people complain. They say, well, boy, it just doesn't, you know, stuff's not working as well as it used to. And that's a problem. And that's a problem. You know, people expect it to work well. And if it doesn't, hey. So I don't, you know, I don't know what the answer is. I think this is one of the reasons in technology anyway, companies in effect obsolete themselves via success. Look at IBM. I'm not talking about the IBM PC. I'm talking about the IBM mainframes. And I think it's starting to happen to Microsoft. You just get too successful, too big, too dominant. You can't change. You're stuck. And I think that's kind of what's happening there. 8888-ASK-LEO. That's the number if you'd like to talk about that or anything that's on your mind having to do with digital technology. Carlos is on the line from Lucerne Valley, California. Hello, Carlos.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It's going great. What can I do
great,
for you?
Great. Thanks for taking my call.
But of course.
Listen, I have an e-machine laptop that I run Windows XP on it.
Okay.
And every time I put a DVD in to watch a movie, the Windows Media pops up, and it starts playing the movie fine, and I can hear all the background noise in the movie, but when it comes to the characters speaking,
yeah,
it's really muffled. And, you know, I go into my volume control, make sure everything's at the top, and everything's, you know, as loud as possibly can be, and then I plug in, you know, external speakers, and same thing.
I hear this complaint a lot. And I hear this complaint a lot. And I think what the first thing to do is to go into your sound settings and make sure that you don't have Dolby Surround or some sort of oddball setting turned on.
Okay.
You want to make sure.
I think I've done.
You've already done that?
Yeah, I think I went there and just put everything at default.
Okay. The other thing to try is to download. This is on XP?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I would suggest going out and downloading one of the third-party DVD players. WinDVD, for instance, from InterVideo.
Okay.
PowerDVD from CyberLink. They might do a better job with audio.
Okay. I think that's
the issue is in general is try is you remember the DVD audio is encoded in Dolby AC3 and if the decoder's not doing a good job, or it's trying to decode 5.1 sound, that center channel is going to be a problem. And that's when dialogue will sound muddled and muffy. You know, you don't want muddled and muffy sound. So download PowerLink WinDVD or CyberLink? PowerDVD from CyberLink. And listen to the, you know, play it back on that. And these are free trials, so it's not going to cost you anything. And if it sounds fine there, then it might be worth buying it. Windows Media Player doesn't do the best job, in my opinion, of playing back DVDs. Isabel, Temecula, California. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, Isabel.
Hi, Leo. I am in desperate need of your help.
Okay.
I purchased an 8-gig gigabank because I was going to back up all my data on my computer and have my computer reformatted.
Yep.
And supposedly, my data was all backed up.
Oh boy!
I didn't do the reformat. Somebody else did it for me. And when he went to try to read what was on the gigabank, he couldn't open it up on both of his computers or any other computers.
How did you back up the data to the gigabank?
I don't know. He did it.
Okay. Did he use the software that came with the gigabank, or did he just copy files over?
I think he copied the files over. It has a USB port.
Right.
You know, a USB connector.
Now, if he used backup software to do it, if he used the single, you know, this device has a single touch backup. It has software. He will have to reinstall that software onto Windows before he'll be able to see the data to restore it. If he just copied the files over and he doesn't see anything on the drive, then he didn't do it. Or it failed or something went wrong. But a lot of times what happens, and this is one of the reasons I'm not fond of backup software, people use backup software.
And they could have used the Gigabank backup software, and they ran the backup software, and it made this big, giant ball of stuff that's not, you know, you look at it, it's just a single file. It's your drive, but it's one single file. You can't copy, you know, the ball over. You have to use the same software you made the ball with to unpack it and put it back on the drive. So make sure, I'm not sure how savvy he is, but make sure that he is doing that. Now, if he looks at the drive and there's nothing on it, you know, something went wrong. He thought he copied it. I don't know. You know, if he used this single touch backup, maybe, you know, it didn't work. If he verified it after he copied it and now it's gone, I don't know what happened. You got to be really, really, really careful when you do this kind of stuff and make sure when you make that copy that you verify you've got a full copy. And that's why, again, I don't like backup software as much, because you can't just look at it and say, oh, yeah, there's my files, there's my folders. If you just copy it over, you can actually, with the drive mounted, it's a USB drive with the drive mounted, you can look at it and you can double-click the file and see if it worked and so forth. It may be that he copied it but pulled the drive out too soon. On Windows, that doesn't usually happen, but it could. And if he pulled the drive out too soon, it hadn't finished the copying, could have maybe damage the data. Hard for me to tell exactly what went wrong, but there's some thoughts. Mary, San Diego, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Mary.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
I'm wonderful. How are you today?
You know, my problem is similar to the previous caller. Where I have a Toshiba XP.
Okay.
And there's no sound in it whatsoever.
Nothing at all.
Just looking at it, says basic setting. It is on. So I don't know what's wrong.
Did it make sound ever?
No. At one point it did, very low, and then it disappeared. And so it's only a year old.
When you got it, when you brought it home from the store, it made no sound?
I really never used it for that purpose.
Ah.
I never used it, but one day I was, you know, listening to some on YouTube, and there was some videos I was listening. The sound was there and was clear. And then after that, it went off. And now I'm looking at the setting, sound setting. It says listening mode, and it says open type headphone. Is that, does that's indented? Does that mean it's on the headphone?
Yeah, it might be. You want to make sure it's set for stereo speakers.
And there is not that. There's no. Oh, the built-in speakers. Is that where
yeah.
it should be?
Yeah.
I see.
And then make sure it's not muted. Most laptops now have a button. Sometimes a dedicated button. Sometimes it's on the function key that'll mute the sound. And,
I see.
And it may be muted.
And when I look on, this says virtual sound on. That means it is on, right?
Yeah, turn off virtual sound. That's actually designed to give it a 3D sound. You know, it's funny. I think people are having problems with their sound because they've made these things so darn
complicated
and fancy for no good reason. It's I guess it's a selling point. Low stereo environmental sound. It sounds like it's coming from behind you. Just make sound come out of my speakers, please.
So what is the virtual sound mean when it's on? That means it has to be off in order for the sound to come up?
No, it doesn't have to be off. It's just I believe it's an effect.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. I mean, you don't need it or you don't. It shouldn't make a difference. Just make sure you have the sound routed to the right place. In this case, it would be the speakers, not the headphones.
Okay.
And that you have it, that it's not muted. And there'll usually be some indication that it is muted. You can do that. And this is the problem, is you could do it by accident on a laptop because, as I say, they're usually function keys or specialized keys for sound. Look for on the laptop, on the keyboard or on the side of the laptop, look for buttons that are louder, softer, and there'll be a third that's a mute button. And you might play with those a little bit. Make sure that you've got the sound turned off that way and that you're not, in fact, muting it. I mean, that happens all the time. My wife will come to me frequently and say, she just checked the other night. I don't hear anything. I said, well, it's just this little button here. Oh, wow, that's cool. It's not hard to be a tech guy. They've made tech so complicated. It's, you know, it's not hard to be an expert. Lynn is on the line from Anderson Valley, South Carolina. I'm sorry, Anders Valley. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Leo. What I want to know is, can I do away with my software firewall if I'm using a router for security?
In my opinion, you can. You know, if you have Zone Alarm or Cyber Defender
or one of those big elaborate software firewalls running on your system, in my opinion, they don't do a lot of good. They cause more difficulty often by warning you, scaring you. And what we found is that bad guys know how to turn them off. Once a bad program's on your system, it can do anything, including disable your firewall. So it's prudent to leave the Windows firewall, the built-in one, on, because that'll prevent cross-network infection if somebody brings a bad, you know, a laptop, let's say, into your network that has a virus on it. It can't then spread to your laptop. The software firewall protects it. But the router is your first line of defense against the bad guys in the outside world.
What router do you recommend?
Doesn't matter. I mean, Linksys is the biggest name. They had some quality control issues for a while. They seem to have fixed those. Netgear's very good. I use, you know, a D-Link. I'm very happy with D-Link. Buffalo's good. Two Wire's good. There are a lot of very good companies.
And you use Apple computers, so you're using a router on your Apple, correct?
I do here in the labs. At home, I use a Apple brand router, the Airport Extreme. I find that they're overpriced and aren't necessarily any better. So, you can use any wireless router with Macs as well. But I use a D-Link here at the office with Macs and PCs, and it does a very, very good job. They should all work about the same, really. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888. Ask Leo.
Yeah.
Just a few more minutes left in the show. Let's get some more calls on here. You were talking to a fellow earlier this hour who had a blog with his partner, and his partner passed away. He left the site up as a memorial. And I've often wondered this. What happens to your blog or your website? I mean, The web is young yet, and so it hasn't happened a lot. But what happens to your blog or your website if you pass away? I mean, I've paid for my domain for something like 10 years. And I have the server fees are linked up to my PayPal account. So if people wanted to keep the site going, they could just by donating the PayPal account. Wouldn't cost that much. Nobody'd have to maintain it, really. And because there's forums and commenting and so forth, people could continue to do all. Most of that would just run automatically. I could keel over right now and that site would just keep on going. And I bet you some people, a lot of people, might not even know anything happened to me. TWIT.TV, that's the podcast netcast site. I'm not going to call them that anymore, by the way. They're just shows. They're shows that you can listen to in a variety of ways, whether on the website, by a download, or even subscription in iTunes, the podcast section. This show, for instance, is available after the fact as a podcast. But I do lots of other shows that never air on a radio station, but are similar. Maybe we get a little geekier. Cover security, Windows, Mac, Linux. There's a dozen different shows. They're all there at TWIT, TWIT.TV. And, of course, there's also our own site, the Tech Guy Labs site, techguylabs.com. That'd keep going. Sasha probably keep doing show notes. I could be keeled over. Sasha, just keep typing them in. For years. Nobody'd ever know. The chat room is irc.dslextreme.com. And my new blog, I'm very proud of my blog, and I encourage you to visit that and participate there. Now, see, the blog would slow down. Blog postings would slow down, I think. I believe so. That's Leoville, leoville.com/blog. Kathy's on the line from La Vergne, California. Hey, Kathy, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hi. I got a computer from a lean sale of a storage unit, and I'm trying to log on. It has Windows XP, but it says admin, and I can't get past that.
Right. So you're able to get the system up and running, but you get to the login, and you can't get past it.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I mean, it's possible that they didn't use a strong password and, you know, maybe if you've tried hitting enter, I suppose.
Oh,
Yeah, and you sometimes typing admin again, admin will lock you. Okay, you did all the obvious.
Yeah.
So
any ideas?
Yeah, it's locked. So you need to unlock it. Now the good news is Windows. When Windows is secure, it's not secure. It's what you're going to do is download, and you'll have to do this on another computer, obviously.
Okay.
Download a program called the Enhanced Boot CD, or you could do a Google. Yeah, you could do a Google for EBCD, and that'll find it for you.
Okay.
And the Enhanced Boot CD, or actually maybe it's Emergency Boot CD, is free. Okay. You'll download it on another PC and burn it to a CD.
Okay.
And then you'll boot from that CD on your new locked PC.
Okay.
Presuming now you might want to test to make sure you can boot to CDs before you do this.
Okay.
If it was a corporate computer, they may have locked that out.
Okay.
In which case you're going to have to format the drive and start over. But
okay.
But if they haven't locked that out, you can boot to that CD and a text menu will come up. And in the text menu, it'll give you a number of things, including clear all the passwords out.
Oh, okay.
And it'll blank out all your passwords. And you can start with a brand new system password, administrator password.
Well, that sounds too easy.
Yeah, it is too easy. So much for security.
Okay. Yeah, great. I'll try it.
All right. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Yeah, that's a common problem where you buy a corporate PC particularly and they're locked down. And they don't, you know, unless it came with a post-it note on the side that says what to do. You're kind of out of luck. EBCD is probably a useful thing for everybody to have. Just make a copy, you know, burn a CD right now with it. Because it has a lot of other features on erasing and fixing and so forth. It's ebcd.pcministry.com. And it's a very useful system restore, recover, fix thing. Nothing, you know, there are other programs like this, like Hyrens Boot CD that contain pirated software. This is not that. This is all open source software. It's actually, I believe it's Linux that it's booting into. And these are all Linux programs that run off of Linux. And so it allows you to mess with things. That's basically what you do. You boot to Linux and Linux can delete the passwords file from Windows so that you can get back into it with a blank password. ebcd.pcministry.com. We put it in the show notes because Sasha's that good. I'm not dead yet. We'll keep the show going. What do you say? if you have comments, questions about anything we've talked about, I want you to email me, leo@techguylabs.com. My assistant Mara is very good at getting back to you. She does a much better job than I do. You'll find many of the things we've talked about on the show notes, but we also update it throughout the week. Shuby's going to get back to it and add additional information as people send me information and so forth and to help me out. And the conversation about the bricking of the iPhone is going to continue on my blog. I put a post up there and lots of comments so far. And it's interesting, a lot of Apple fans who I'm surprised are defending Apple's actions, saying, no, Apple has a right to do this. You knew what you were doing when you got into it. I didn't brick my phone. I want to point this out. I have a hacked iPhone. I have an unhacked iPhone. Both are still working. I've updated the unhacked iPhone, and I'm not updating, and I can't update the hacked one. But I've got them both. My quarrel with Apple is that, you know, it's fine for you to say, I'm not going to support it. It's hacked. You know, we're going to force you to go back to AT&T. But for you to damage the phone, they say, oh, no, you damaged it by hacking it. Yeah, but it was working fine until you updated it. If you damage the phone and make it unusable, then I have a problem with it. What do you think? We'll talk about it on the show tomorrow and on the blog, leoville.com/blog. Thank you so much for being here. Enjoy your Geek Week. We'll see you next time. I am Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy. Well, that's it for The Tech Guy. Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to hear the show live, check your local listings or visit our website, leo.am, for a list of stations where you can hear The Tech Guy radio show live on the air. You can also hear archived shows at leo.am and subscribe to our podcast there, or open your podcasting client and subscribe to the feed at leo.am/podcasts/KFI. Thanks to Howard Bailey for the music for this podcast. You can find more of Howard's work at soundclick.com. Thanks to Premier Radio Networks for syndicating the show. Most of all, thanks to you for listening. This is Leo Laporte. I'll see you next time on The Tech Guy.